Sarah Hines is and her husband have been doing, they are probably the foremost researchers on pre-birth experiences. We talk a lot about at IONS about, of course, life after life. In some ancient religions, it's mentioned in the Bible, and some other ancient religions, there's discussion of a pre-birth experience. That is, we are spirit beings experiencing a mortal experience. We lived before we came here to Earth. So she and her husband have collected literally hundreds of stories of these pre-birth experiences. They've written several books related to that. Her new book out is called Memory Catcher, When Angels Speak, Who Will Listen? I might note that she has a website herself, Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, Hines, H-I-N-Z-E. But we're delighted to have her with us, and I'll turn the time over to Sarah.
I'm very delighted to be here. I always look forward to your energy because I usually say more than I ever should say when I'm with you, because I just feel a warmth and a purity and a beauty of spirit with you here in Utah. I think about an experience I had when I went to the Chicago American Booksellers Association to literally find my literary agent through prayer. Remarkably, I did find him and was able to get my contract with Simon Schuster, which really opened me up nationally to have an opportunity to share the pre-birth experience. But one of the things that I still remember about that conference is a beautiful man who was beautiful of spirit, and he was Sikh, and he was from India. And before he started his talk, he just offered a little prayer. And in the spirit of that wonderful man, I'm just going to offer a little prayer that I will be blessed that my words will be meaningful to you, that I may touch on to something or some things that will be helpful to you or comforting to you, because that is my prayer. Over 25 years, and Chad, my publisher, reminded me, I'm coming into 30 years of researching this material. And it has been a marvelous journey to study the accounts of people who have had visitations from their children before they were born. So this, in effect, is the mirror opposite bookend of the near-death experience. The unseen world is a vast place, more vast than we can imagine. And I just need to comment that whenever I'm ever called an expert in anything, I have to say I'm an expert in the unknown. I am like a woman who is studying the ocean. She goes out into the ocean with a bucket, and she takes a bucket of the water. She goes to her laboratory and, with an eyedropper, puts a drop of that water onto a slide. And then she looks at that slide and she studies the ocean. That's a little bit of the way I look at myself. Because when you study many, many stories and you hear many accounts of people that have had a contact from a pre-birth spirit, and those accounts begin to take form and similarities come through them, you do feel like you are gaining some understanding of that. I'm going to divide my talk into three parts. First, I'm going to talk a little about myself, which I've never really done before. Chad, my publisher, reminded me I never talked about myself, or not that it's that interesting, but I wanted you to kind of understand a little about how I came to study the unseen world. And then I want to talk a little about the pre-birth experience, and then accounts of people seeing their future children in a near-death experience. Maybe some of you are thinking, well, I've never heard of anything like that before. And I guess that's why I write books about it, because it's something you're going to want to learn about. I was a very unusual child in that I was born having a remembrance of coming from heaven before I was born. And I can't say that I remember detail, but I knew that I was on the earth, and I knew that earth was not my home. And I had a wonderful family. As I began to write about it in the Memory Catcher, I realized I had a very unusual ailment. I was homesick for heaven, even as a very little child. And I share that because I want to open people's eyes up about children. Children have very spiritual experiences. They really do. One of my dear friends and colleagues, Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who has endorsed my work, taught that before a child is 5 years old, they are still connected to heaven. After age five, they do become earthbound. So before I was 5 years old, I had some unusual experiences in that I had spontaneous out-of-body experiences. And I shared it in the book to tell you that children are very connected to heaven. I would leave my body, I would go to the ceiling of my mother's bedroom, and I couldn't get any further. But I knew where home was. I knew it was east. I knew where it was, and I wanted to go back. Well, after spontaneously doing that on several occasions over a period of, seems like about a month or so, one day I just spontaneously was out of my body again, looking down on my little five-year-old self, and a very male voice spoke to me and said, "You get back in your body and don't you ever do that again." So I did. Whoosh. I never did that again. But I had learned something. At age five, I knew there was an unseen world. I knew there was a God. I knew there were angels. I knew it because I had heard it and I had felt it. And so that affected my life even as a child. As I got older, I continued to still search for God. And I found answers when I was 19 years old that gave me the direction that I needed to understand. Because I knew as a child that Jesus had a body. I knew that Heavenly Father had a body. And in my little church, we would recite a creed that they were all encompassed into one. I wanted to stand up on my little pew in my little church and say, "Don't believe it, people, it's not true." But I was only seven, so who would listen? As I grew older and I found what I was looking for, I found those answers. Met my husband, and as we were dating, I had my first pre-birth experience. When I met my husband, I knew that I had known him before, and he had the same experience. He had the same feeling. After we were dating for about a week or so, we were walking up in the Logan Canyon, and I remembered that I had walked with him before in a beautiful place, and we had the same memory at the same time. During those first few weeks that we were dating, one evening we were sitting out, I was at Utah State University, looking out over the beautiful valley, and we decided we wanted to offer a prayer of gratitude that we had found each other. It's a lonely place, this world is, and what a joy to have a companion that you love, that gives you a feeling of home, what home was like before you were born. And as my husband offered a simple little prayer as we were sitting in the car looking out over the beautiful Logan Valley, I began to hear music. Now, this was at midnight, and I knew my roommates were not playing the radio or the record player as it was at that time. And the music changed tone. It began to sound like a hymn, even kind of like a big choir singing a hymn. And then I knew I was hearing a heavenly choir, and I was overwhelmed. I was brought to tears, and I asked my husband, "Do you hear it?" And he said, "No, I don't hear what you're hearing." But it was a sacred moment to me to hear that choir from the unseen world. I had doctors tell me that because of a few conditions I have that I wouldn't be able to have children. But 9 months and 2 weeks after we were married, we had our first daughter, Krista. What a miracle for me, who thought I would never hold a child in my arms. And mothers, you know that special sacred moment when you're up at 2 a.m. to check on that little newborn baby and to nurse that child and hold it close, just you and the baby. And I was holding her close and examining her little fingers and toes, and it was like a heavenly computer downloaded to me that she was a member of the heavenly choir I had heard. I had heard my unborn child singing. Who else was in that choir? I think it was a host of the unborn, because my work has become to be a voice for them. In the heavenly realm of those who are most innocent and most helpless, I believe it's our brothers and sisters who are waiting to be born. There is great opposition on the earth for them to come worldwide. It's hard to imagine what it may be like, but I've met several people who have heard their cries, as I have. And so the stories I share with you are giving them a voice in many different ways. They are getting a voice through all the many people worldwide who are doing that. I'm just one of those people. Well, you probably know what a pre-birth experience is. I remember the night my husband and I coined the term. I was very blessed to marry a psychologist, and for many reasons, but I needed a professional expert to do my studies. It's so nice to work together with him. But we coined the term pre-birth experiences, and it is an experience that someone has with a spirit that has not yet been born. And it can happen in dreams, in visions. It can happen in a near-death experience. People can hear a voice. I heard music. I heard singing. People can have various kinds of spiritual experiences where they are in contact with a soul waiting to be born. This can happen to little children too. In fact, one of the more beautiful part of the studies are when little children are visited by a sibling who has not yet been born. One of my favorite stories is told by a wonderful man by the name of Neil Maxwell, who's passed away. But he shared a story about a wonderful family who's from Mesa, Arizona, and they had adopted three little children and felt like their family was complete. Well, their littlest child, who was about 3 years old, one day the three-year-old son said, "Mommy, there's another little girl who is supposed to come to our family." The mother said, in effect, "We're already so blessed to have all of you." The boy continued, "She has dark hair and dark eyes, and she lives a long way from here." The mother asked, "How do you know this?" To which the boy replied, "Jesus told me upstairs." To which the mother replied, "We don't have an upstairs." The parents, being taught by the child, got in touch with an international adoption agency. Today, Nan and Dan Barker have added a fifth child to their family, a little girl with dark hair and dark eyes from Kazakhstan of the former Soviet Union. What I love is that the parents remarkably listened. They listened to this little child who announced a new sibling that was coming. One of the special stories that I love very much is a little boy who asked his mother to read a bedtime story to him. She had been reading stories to him about his grandfather, who was a colonizer and an explorer. And he said, "No, I don't want to hear stories about him. I want to hear about Grandpa Robert." Well, she didn't remember telling him about Grandpa Roberts. And she said, "Why do you want to hear about Grandpa Robert?" "Well, Mother, he's the one that brought me to Earth." Now, we've collected several stories of children and adults remembering an ancestor particularly, often a grandparent, great-grandparent, who literally was an escort that brought them to Earth. We know that in a near-death experience, there are those waiting to take us home, but apparently there are those who are also escorting us here as well. We often hear about the mothers having announcing dreams where they receive these visions from their children. But I received a really special news story about a year ago from a young man who actually contacted me on Facebook. And he had met a beautiful girl and they were married. And about the time they were married, his brother died, who was a young man around the age of 18. And one evening, he felt his brother with him in the room. He didn't see his brother, but he felt him there. And he also heard giggles of a little child. And he knew, not through vision, but through hearing and through feeling, that his brother, who was deceased, had brought to him his unborn son. And it was a very special experience for him. And soon, his wife got pregnant and had a little boy. Well, a few years later, the same thing happened. The brother came near that discernment, the same feeling of a little boy there, and they had the little boy. And now they have had a dream of a little girl, and she is from Japan. Now, the father has worked in Japan, so he was able to literally get a job in Japan, take his wife and two little boys, and they are now waiting and looking for a little Japanese girl that they want to adopt. It's interesting how powerful a pre-birth experience can be. Have any of you read the book Between a Rock and a Hard Place? Aaron Ralston? Did you see the movie 127 Hours? Which was nominated for an Oscar. Aaron was a young man who was traveling in the Utah Canyons out in St. John's Canyon, Big John Canyon, doing something that I would never do. I usually don't cross the street unless I'm holding someone's hand. You know what I mean? These extreme sports I do not understand. But he wasn't just hiking in the canyon. He was going down in the ravines and hiking alone way down there. He found himself down alone in a very narrow canyon, and an 800-pound boulder rolled onto his hand and trapped him. He was down there, and for 4 days and four nights, he was trapped in this canyon with an 800-pound rock on his arm. He couldn't get out. He had a out-of-body experience when he knew that he wouldn't last very much longer. He left his body. He had already lost 40 pounds in 4 to 5 days. His spirit left his body, and he traveled out of the canyon into a place of great light. And as he moved through the light, he saw a wooden floor that was very shiny. He saw a little boy playing on the floor with a truck. And then he saw himself walking into the room, but he only had one hand. The other hand was gone, and he had a stump. He made eye contact with this little boy, and he said there was a light, a power that radiated between the two of them that was mesmerizing. He said he had never felt that kind of love. Well, he picked up the little boy with one hand, put him up on his shoulder, and walked around, and then he was out of that vision, back in his body. He knew he had to get out of there because he had had contact with his future child. So what did he do? He cut off his hand with some makeshift tools that he had. Even trapped there, he was still able to get into his backpack. He literally took an hour and a half to break those bones, to snip those tendons, and to leave that hand behind under that 800-pound rock. He made himself a makeshift tourniquet and got out of there, and by some miracle was rescued. Today, he's married, and little Max is here. The little boy is here. When he attended his premiere for his movie, 127 Hours, he was on Good Morning America, and he said, "That little boy made all the difference. I had to live for him. I had to have him." And that's the power of a pre-birth experience. Life-changing and life-saving. One of the miraculous stories that happened after we moved to Mesa, Arizona, about 20 years ago, there was a shocking kidnapping that happened. A little three-year-old girl was kidnapped out of her mother's car. The mother had parked in front of the school for a moment, ran inside, who knows, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, came back, and the little three-year-old was gone. Well, of course, the whole city of Mesa, Arizona was frantic. It was all over the news. Everyone was praying and anxious about this and looking at their own children with a little more care. On the third day, a hunter went quail hunting, and he saw a little girl just standing in the bush. She just had on her little underwear, was barefoot, and she went up to him, and he picked her up and called 911, and they brought in a helicopter and brought her into the hospital. As is true of trauma, when people have trauma, she went 3 days and three nights alone in monsoons with no food or water. People, it takes a while for the mind to recount really what happened in a spiritual sense. if you have a spiritual experience or a near-death experience, it takes a while for the mind to file it and analyze it and speak it. And so over a period of time, she began to tell her family, there was an angel with me in the desert. She told me where to sit, to get under the tree so I wouldn't get wet, and she would come and play with me, and she wore a white t-shirt. And on the day that I was found, she told me to get up and walk, and she told me where to walk. And then I found the nice man who rescued me. Well, they were all so grateful that this had happened and that she was okay. About a year later, the family had another little girl. And when the little girl was about 1 year old and she was walking, and Sarah was now five, Sarah Skidmore, she told her mommy, Jessica was the one that was with me in the desert. Jessica was her little one-year-old sister. It was Jessica. She was my angel. And Sarah still believes that. And I was able to do a few television shows with the Skidmore family, and we've become very good friends. But have you ever thought of an unborn spirit being your guardian angel? It's very possibly true. When I began to write my book, my very first book, Life Before Life, my daughter made a very good friend. Her name is Joan, and Joan is from New York, and she's fiery and animated and all those wonderful things that why I love New Yorkers so much. And I asked Joan if she would read my manuscript, and she did. And she said, I had an experience like that, but I never really put it all together, what happened. This is another experience of an unborn spirit being a guardian angel. Joan had just moved to a new home and was home alone, and her neighbor had called and said, my dog is lost. Maybe I'll stop by and we'll go for a walk and we'll look for the dog. So Joan was expecting the doorbell to ring and it would be her neighbor. So when the doorbell rang and it was a man she had never seen before saying he needed to use the phone, he got into the house before she had any time to lock the door again. And she was assaulted, seriously assaulted. She thought that he would come back and kill her before he left. But she felt a presence come into the room. It was an angel. She didn't know who it was, but it was a great protector that had come to protect her. The intruder left, and when the door shut and she knew he was gone, she got up and called the police and ran outside to feel the sunshine because she was alive and she was going to be okay. About 2 years later, Joan gave birth to a baby girl. And she says when she looked into the eyes of that baby girl, she knew that that was the spirit that had protected her from almost certain death, from the arms of a violent intruder. The unborn have many roles to play in our life. When Darrell and I and Suzanne were on radio yesterday, Darrell shared some accounts about the unborn being Cupid. Maybe that's kind of a, you know, something to laugh about. That's kind of a different thought to imagine that. But I have several stories where that appears to be the case. For example, there's a story of a young woman, her name is Alice, felt very, very, very inclined to go to the pizza parlor. And she didn't even like pizza. She was so compelled to go, she went. She was sitting alone and a bit uncomfortable, and she noticed a young man come in with two small boys. The little boys ran over to Alice and said, hi, how you doing? Would you like to meet our daddy? And she thought, no, not really. But finally the young man came over and introduced himself, so they sat there and ordered pizza. And she said that she normally didn't do this, but that night she did. Paul and Alice fell in love and got married. They had a little boy named Alex, and when he was 3.5 years old, he said, I was so happy when I got you and Daddy to go to the pizza parlor and meet. Alex is in school now and no longer retains that memory. So it's very possible that they play many roles and do many things in the unseen world to bring us to those we need to meet and to bring us to our destiny or our life's purpose. It could be our unborn children doing that for us. Now I wanted to talk a little bit about seeing unborn children in a near-death experience. I was here about a year ago when Crystal Westover spoke, and I have her story was one of the first stories I found in the literature where someone had met spirits waiting to be born in a near-death experience. This was in a book called Transformed by the Light. And Crystal was a young girl who drowned in a swimming pool. The first person she saw was an angel named Elizabeth, whom she knew was her guardian angel. And Elizabeth took her to the light, into a heavenly place, where she met Jesus and other spirits that were there. She met Heather and Melissa, whom they told her, "We are spirits that haven't been born yet." But as Crystal spoke here about a year ago, she did not know who Melissa and Heather were. She didn't know anything about them except they were spirits that were waiting to be born. So to me, that was very interesting, because most people, when they see spirits that are waiting to be born, they know really specifically who they are. When I was writing my book, Coming from the Light, I happened to meet a gentleman by the name of Paul Perry, who is a New York Times best-selling author and has done research with Raymond Moody and others who've had near-death experiences. And I asked him the question, do you have accounts of people who've met spirits waiting to be born in a near-death experience? And he said, "I have never been asked that question. I've been asked a million questions, but I've never been asked that." So he looked back into his accounts, and he found also another story of a young man who drowned. Actually, he fell. He was hiking around water and fell and drowned there in a river. And on the other side, he was playing with some little children there. He was asking them, "Who are you and what are you doing?" And he was told by the Savior that those were spirits who had not been born yet. And he didn't know ever who they were either. Those are the only two accounts that I've found of so many where people have had a near-death experience, seen spirits waiting to be born, but didn't know who they were. So they are there occasionally. Those who pass over somehow are into that realm where they are in contact with those spirits who are waiting to be born. But most people do recognize them, as I have said. One of my favorite stories is actually from a friend of mine. She's a dear friend now, as happens when you get to hang around with near-death experiencers, because most of my friends have been to heaven and back. I don't know about your friends, but it's kind of fun to hang around with people who've been to heaven and back, because you can have some really great talks. Most people don't like to talk about that sort of thing, but that's why I like to be with you. But I was at the doctor's office, and I heard a lady talking about her near-death experience, and so naturally I perked up, because I'm always looking for stories. She said, "Well, my name is Debbie, but I've got to go, and I'll give you a call." So I handed her my phone number, and away she went. And she did call me, and her story is very, very remarkable. Debbie grew up in the most abusive environment that I've ever heard about. Everything horrible you can ever imagine that would happen to a person, a little child, happened to her repeatedly. And when she was 5 years old, she just decided, after being seriously assaulted, that she just didn't want to live anymore. And she just left this world and she went into heaven. She went to a place where people were gathered because they were waiting. The people were saying, "He is coming." "Who?" I wondered. The light came close enough that I could see a figure inside it. I realized that the light was in fact radiating from the individual. I heard names being reverently spoken around me: Messiah, Savior. The being of light glided majestically through the corridor of people toward me. I felt that I could see into his soul, into eternity. I knew he could see into mine. "Your body has died too soon. You're not intended to be here yet. You have not completed your mission on earth, and you need to go back." His words kindled panic in my 5-year-old self. "Go back? Oh no, I'm not going back there," I cried. "I want to stay." "You did nothing wrong. You are innocent. You need to go back to raise your children." "It doesn't make any sense. I don't have any kids. I'm only 5 years old. He responded with the persistence of a loving parent. That is why you need to return. When you grow up, you will have children. I don't want to have children. Let someone else have them. I just want to stay here. You are their chosen mother. They wait for you. When you grow up and have babies, these choice spirits will be your children. At this great point, this great being shared eternal knowledge with me. So sweet was this information that mere words cannot convey what I experience. And he took her out on a journey through space and through time into this third realm where she said it wasn't there that there was light. This realm was light. Everything I could see seemed alive with light. The longer I stayed, the more familiar this place felt. Feelings of homesickness enveloped me. I began to comprehend that I came from here. This was the place I lived before I went to Earth. I had come home. He guided me through a premortal campus. Everything being taught had something to do with preparations to be born on Earth. There were classes on the culture and language and the era of expected arrival on Earth. Talents and gifts were being developed and improved. Science and math of all varieties were taught. The great minds of the future were already in the making. An assortment of paintings and sculptures and drawings was on exhibit near the Center for Fine Arts. The gospel of the Son of God was also taught here. This great being, this Messiah, the Savior, he said, "There is someone I want you to meet." With a knowing smile, he turned me around, and that is when I saw them. Four ethereal beings were before me. They had the same translucent beauty to them as everything else I had seen. Something deep inside me stirred, and I recognized my children to be. And then she goes on and describes these individual four spirits. The leader of the group was to be my firstborn. He was tall, slender, bright, serious, handsome, and intent. The second was also male. He was slighter than the first, but only in size. This one had a twinkle in his eye, a smile that stretched across his face, and a look that said, "I know something." The third was a girl, feminine and graceful. She sang without moving, like the plants in the garden. Energy was fairly bursting from out of her. She looked worried. The fourth was smaller than the rest. She said nothing. She just wrapped herself around me and hugged me. I could feel that she had loved me for an eternity. The first one touched my arm and communicated to me through his touch, as well as telepathically. Andrew was anxious to be born on Earth. I explained to him that someone else could be his mother and that it might be better for him anyway. But he was insistent that he and his siblings wanted only me. If I did not go back, it would frustrate plans and commitments we made with each other before I was born. I could not dissuade him. The other three were also trying to convince me that I should return because time was running out. The little one even began to tug on me in an effort to direct me to Earth. My friend, the Messiah, touched my elbow, drawing my attention away from my children. "You must choose now. Isn't there any other way?" I knew he was right. My children were urging me to proceed. A small crowd had gathered at the scene, and they too were silently urging me to return to Earth. With reluctance, I said goodbye to the children. I was led to what seemed to be an opening in space. I could see the world below me. I hesitated and turned to the one who had been with me throughout the journey. "I longed to stay." "I'm scared," I said to him. "You don't know what it's like back there." "Yes, I do," he said. Those three words kindled a faint memory deep in my heart. I now understood the marks on his hands and feet. I realized who he was. I remembered that we both lived in this place before we were born. He had been on Earth before me, and he knew all about my life. With new understanding, I said, "I will go." He turned me around and I was on my way. I felt myself being drawn through a tunnel of swirling energy toward Earth. The next thing I knew, I was back in my body. I was 5 years old and I had just been to heaven and back. I never entirely forgot the feeling of being loved by Jesus. That love kept me alive through a lifetime of abuse. I am now the mother of 4 children. These children are the spirits that I met when I was 5 years old. They are the light and joy of my life. I am a private woman. This account is sacred to me. I have kept it in my heart, but I am now compelled to share it with you. That is a powerful story that she wrote in her own words, and I think it really says so much through her story. An interesting category of those who have near-death experience comes from our dear friend Ned Doherty. Ned, we met when we spoke at the University of Connecticut at the first IANS national conference that we were invited to. And Ned was on the board, and it came his turn to speak, and we wanted to hear what his experience had been. Ned was a very wealthy man who lived in the Hamptons. He had a helicopter and a jet and a mansion, everything that the wealthy could have. And he owned a nightclub there, and he was in a fight with his partner. During that fight, Ned had a heart attack. And he said, when I was in the ambulance, my spirit just left that ambulance and just went into the light. He said, I went home to God. Ned has written a whole book about his experience. It's called Life in the Fast Lane. But one of the remarkable things he shared was that when he was in his life review and he was seeing how he had been such a hedonist, he had been such a jerk his whole life to everybody. A beautiful woman came to him and became his escort. He called her the Lady of Light. Her name was Mary. Mary took him to a place where he saw in the distance the Savior with 5 little children. And Mary said, these could have been your children. He thought, I don't really like children. I never wanted to have children. Why would I want to have children? And she said, look again. He looked again, and with the knowledge that comes when you're in the spirit, if you're willing to receive it, he realized these were 5 children he had talked his girlfriends into aborting. He was shocked. He had no clue that anything like that was going on. He was shocked. He was sad. Mary said to him, if you will get your life in order, and if you go back and shape up and live to serve others, and if you live to love, she showed him a little boy, a beautiful little boy with blonde hair and blue eyes. I will give you that little boy for your son. Ned agreed that he would go back. Mary showed him this future son's life with Ned as the father, from his birth up to his first tricycle, all the way up to his high school graduation. And she showed Ned there proudly standing by him as his father. So Ned came back, of course, or he wouldn't have heard this story. And Ned had Christopher, his only child. Christopher is now 21 years old. And Ned said, the day Christopher was born, he looked into his eyes and he knew Christopher was a child of God. I had the opportunity to speak with Ned in a program when we spoke on Capitol Hill at a caucus meeting during a difficult time. It was a hearing concerning partial birth abortion, which is a very difficult and sad procedure that happens. And Ned and I had the opportunity to speak there before some people who were voting on that decision. And we didn't have success because at that time, in the national level, it was passed. Partial birth abortion was legalized. But it was a very special time to be able to teach these kinds of principles on Capitol Hill to interns, a few legislators, those who had come. But another thing that I teach is that the Savior is forgiving, very, very forgiving of all things. Nothing we could ever do ever goes beyond His care. And He makes everything right eventually. I want to share one more thing. So be thinking about your questions. As we're talking about the spirits waiting to come to earth, there's one more category that people are meeting now in a near-death experience. Have any of you read the wonderful little book called Heaven is for Real by Todd Burpo? Yes, isn't it a great little book? It sold 5 million copies, so obviously it's a great book. But his father and his father's friend wrote this book for the little boy. He had quite an extensive experience in the heavenly realm. He saw a beautiful young woman there. And when he came back, he said to his mommy, "Mommy, I have two sisters." She said, "No, you just have one sister. Are you thinking about your cousin?" "No, I have two sisters because when I was in heaven, I saw my sister that died in your tummy." Now, his mother had had a miscarriage, and little Todd had met his miscarried sister in heaven. And he said, "Mommy, she doesn't have a name because you didn't give her a name." Well, his mother didn't really know if it was a girl or boy, so she didn't name her. But I've heard that little Todd tell that story on Good Morning America, and the people go, "What? You saw your miscarried sister in heaven?" Yes, a lot of stories are coming in like that right now. And I will share a new story that I received just a few weeks ago from a dear friend. Her brother had had a near-death experience, and he wanted to tell her about it. He had seen his wife, who was already on the other side, and she brought three little boys to him. And one little boy, she said, "These are the sons I miscarried." And the one little boy stepped forward and he said, "My name is Stephen." They named one of them Stephen. The next little boy said, "My name is William." They had named one of them William. And the third little boy stepped forward and said, "You didn't name me." But he was there. And myself, I have had miscarriages too. It's a very special thing that I feel that mothers and fathers can understand and contemplate and meditate and pray about receiving their own comfort and their own understanding of that, because it is a very traumatic thing. One of my miscarriages, this handsome son appeared to me the night that I lost him, and he said, "Mother, it was never my intention to stay very long. If I had been born, I would have died very early, and it would have caused you so much grief that I asked Heavenly Father if I could leave early. And it's okay, Mom. It was never my intention to stay." Well, that did bring some comfort, but, you know, not a lot. It takes time to heal from the death of a loved one. And even a miscarriage is a death of a loved one. But several years later, when my husband and I were working on one of our books, my husband wrote this beautiful passage that he read to me. It was so beautiful that when I heard him read it, I thought, "I wonder if an angel helped him write that." And then, for some reason, my eyes were open and I saw our son Daniel standing behind my husband, who was seated at the computer. And there was a face that had no cares of the world on it. It's hard to describe a preborn spirit. It's hard to describe a spirit who's not been to the earth really, except that brief experience that he had. But his face was so pure and so holy. And he turned and looked at me, and he told me how much he loved his father. So these special ones that leave, that go early, or our loved ones, all is really well. All is well for them. We're just the ones that have a hard time letting them go. So with those stories in mind, let's open it up and get some of your questions.
As you were talking about the pre-birth from miscarriages, it reminded me of my experience I had with my son. His mother began to spot while we were visiting my parents and was very concerned. And I said, "Well, okay, let's go home. I'll try to give you a blessing and hopefully things will be okay." So we left right away. We went home and I intended to give her a blessing where she would be okay. The spotting would stop and the pregnancy would continue the way it should. But as I put my hands on her head and was blessing her, the words didn't come. It was kind of like trying to talk to a beautiful girl when I was 16. It was blah, blah, blah. So finally I realized that I was going the wrong direction. So I just stopped for about 30 to 45 seconds, which is an eternity during a prayer. And when I started to talk again, I was told that the body was not forming properly, and that his, so I knew it was a son, we didn't know at that time, that his mission required that he have a strong, healthy body to complete his mission. That his body was not forming properly, that she would miscarry in 2 to 3 days, and that when she was able, she would form another body for him, and he would be able to come and perform his mission on earth. Mm-hmm. Of course, when the message was given, it wasn't the one we were looking for, but and we were in tears. 2 months later, she got pregnant again. It was a boy. 6 girls and 1 buck is what I ended up with, but he is now a surgeon that is required to have his everything working properly and a strong, healthy body. And there's just no doubt that the second body, he had to go back and wait for a body to be prepared for him that would be such that he could carry out his mission.
Absolutely. I totally understand that. That's very special, and I totally agree with that concept.
First of all, we'd like to thank you for sharing the things that are precious. It takes a lot of courage to dig deep in your heart and bring spiritual things in a temporal setting, but it lifts all of us. So, 3 quick questions. Number 1, the children who have been aborted, do they get a second chance?
It appears that some of them do, because there are stories that indicate that they can come back to the same mother, they can come back to another generation in that family, or to anyone. But it appears that for some, a plan B, and I talk about that in my new book, The Memory Catcher. For others, Heavenly Father, each individual soul is considered very individually. It's not a one-size-fits-all plan. For some, it doesn't appear that they do, but for many that come back, they come back very traumatized and angry, traumatized with anxiety. I've interviewed several children that remember being aborted previously, of course, in a previous coming. And these are very precious, little, simple little children, and adults that remember as well. One of the lady that endorsed the memory catcher, Dr. Carolyn, is a PhD, a quite renowned counselor in California who actually worked with Scott Peck, who wrote The Road Less Traveled. She remembers her mother trying to abort her, but it was not successful. And Carolyn had an angel that came to her within her mother's womb and said, "You don't have to stay." And she said, "I want to. I want to learn all I can." She has been crippled her entire life, but is a woman of pure love to her mother and father. A remarkable woman. A lot of stories, and they're all very individual.
Thank you. The second and the third question, is it the same place where children go and wait to be born as people who die? Is it the same location? Children who haven't yet been born versus people who have lived their lives and died?
That's a good question. Of course, I don't really know. The realms of heaven are vast. I know Suzanne Freeman has seen the reassigned children's area where the children go back who are reassigned. And when she read my book, The Castaways, which was about that place, she said, "You got it right." There are those who have a near-death experience who see souls waiting to be born. So obviously, there is some mingling. But generally, we assume and we guess that they're generally most often not mingling.
Thank you. If a baby dies, the soul of that baby in heaven, is it a big person's soul or a baby's soul?
Well, spirits are adults, but how they are manifested in dreams or visions, they may manifest themselves as a baby. I know even in after-death communication, and there's a whole book written on that by the Guggenheims, Hello from Heaven, wonderful book for those who may have grief. It's very comforting. Spirits can appear maybe maybe they were dressed in Revolutionary War clothing or whatever, but they seem to have a vast variety of clothing, or, but it's generally understood that they are adult spirits.
This may be one of those questions that doesn't have an answer, but can you shed any light on the situation where the woman was assaulted and a future child came as a protector? It's just so difficult for me to comprehend how that pure, innocent, naive, celestial being would be put into a demeaning, ugly, earthly, telestial environment like that and not be tainted or damaged or wounded. Yeah. So ill-prepared for such. Do you see what I'm trying to say?
Sure.
The diametrically opposed worlds of the lowest
right.
of the low in this kingdom and then purity of the pre-life.
Well, the ancient Jews talk about, in the ancient texts, you read the Memory Catcher, you know how I love the ancient texts. The ancient Jewish texts, several of them, talk about the holding place. Preparing to come to earth, we prepare in various stages to come. As we get near to our birth, we come quite close to earth and are in this place called the holding place where we can actually visit our homes. And you know, that's where mothers or little siblings will see a little child running down the hall or something, later coming as their sibling. Perhaps this daughter that was this protector of the mother was in that holding place. Perhaps she was very close to her mother even at that time, because the unborn love their mothers and fathers. And they know we are so not perfect. It doesn't matter. They love us and they want to be near us. And don't ever feel like you can't have a child because you're not perfect, because none of us ever are. Because of the love she had for the mother, and because she was so near earth, she may have been very near to the mother anyhow. You know, I have a memory that I write about in The Memory Catcher of being with my grandmother. My grandmother died as a young woman at age 45, and the family never talked about her. You brought up her name, they would leave the room in tears. Finally, when my dad was very ill, my mother told me the story of my grandmother. She was very, very abused by my grandfather. And as my mother was telling me this story, I just had a flash of a picture in my mind. I saw myself as an unborn spirit standing in my grandmother's room when she was crying after being abused. And I saw myself standing there. I couldn't stop it, but I was a witness to what happened. And I would report it someday in heaven, what I saw. Even though I was an unborn spirit with my grandmother and I couldn't stop it, I was there because I loved her, and I was there to offer any comfort I could.
I got a Cupid question for you for seeking for more stories about that, but just to mention, I've seen artworks where there's baby spirits with wings surrounding Cupid and they're pointing at the lovers. Shoot your arrow right over there.
Yeah.
And so my question is, do you have any more stories about that type of thing where unborn spirits are trying to get their parents together?
Yeah, one of my favorite stories is this family had four little children, and the littlest one began to talk to the parents one evening. He was about four, and he told them about the night they met, and he described how they met and even what they had on, the color of the sweater and the color of the shirt that the mother and father had on. She actually went to retrieve these clothes because she had saved them as kind of a token of their first night they met. And he said, yeah, that's what you were wearing. The little boy said, you remember when I put a light on Daddy? Now, they were at a dance. You know how the men are on one side, the women are on the other. And she was almost ready to leave because it wasn't working out. And then she saw this light over this one young man. Well, at the same time, he was seeing a light up on her. And so they managed to get to each other and dated and fell in love and got married. And the little boy said, I was the one that put the light on you, Mommy and Daddy, because I wanted to be born.
The children obviously have names before they come. Are those the same names that the parents are inspired to give them when they're on Earth?
Dr. Kenneth Ring, whom I love, he's one of the heroes of the near-death studies. I called Dr. Ring early on in my research to talk to him about what I was doing, and he said, oh, you're studying the announcing dream. Well, through the Bible, children announced their names, you know, to Mary, to Elizabeth. They announce the name they want to be called. I've had 5 or 6 children announce their name to me before they were born. Names that I would not have necessarily chosen. So it appears that, and that is one of the most common of the pre-birth experiences, for a child to manifest, my name is Andrew, my name is Matthew. And the mother will feel that. And it's a very tangible feeling that you know that this is really something real I need to pay attention to.
Do you feel like in every situation and all over the world that the children choose the parents? Do the parents choose the children? Does God choose who is going to which family? How does this whole choice thing go? Or in some, like I know somebody who was told in a blessing that he had chosen his parents. No. But is that always the case in every family around the world that somehow there was a choice?
Yeah, I really don't know every family, how it works. I just know the stories I hear and what I've personally experienced. But it appears that even in the premortal realm, we do have choice. Choice is a big deal, premortally here and here. And yet I think, well, in Elaine Durham's account, she was shown 3 families I believe she could go to. She chose a family where she knew there would be problems. She didn't know how severe the problems would be or exactly what they were. But she wanted to learn. She wanted to gain the knowledge of the experience. You see, she chose hard tests because in choosing trials that are difficult, it brings us knowledge, it brings us growth, and we take that knowledge back with us. We don't want to become bitter here because generally it is my belief that we have bumps in the road and we have things that happen, but generally if we stay hopeful and near to a source of God that gives us faith and hope, it's basically, I think, mostly what we chose. It gives us that knowledge, and therefore we can go out, no matter what we experience, and choose to not be a victim. We can choose to be a person that brings good news and good cheer to others. And it's liberating to do that. But I think there's just some sort of experience of the heavenly forces and then our choices. But I think it's something that probably takes a long time to work out premortally. And then many people have to go to a plan B or a plan C because plan A didn't work out. No, eventually it'll all work out in the end.
Do you believe that the kind of circumstances we are born into in this life, in this estate, have some bearing on how well we kept our premortal life or premortal estate, like those who kept it less well might be born into more negative circumstances of this estate, whereas those who made good grades in the first estate are born into a higher or better set of circumstances in this estate. I'm sure it's not just happenstance.
Yeah, I think of the story of Roy Mills, and I'll answer it through stories because, remember, I just know a drop, maybe. I answer it through the stories I've collected. I think that from what Roy Mills said, the mighty spirits are those who come down and have many trials. Those are the mighty spirits. Those are the noble ones who come to learn, who come to give us opportunity to serve them. And the great and noble spirits, the mighty spirits is what Roy Mills called them, are just those that wanted to learn different things, maybe harder things, maybe things that for us look difficult. I'm thinking about the wonderful story of DeLynn, whom I think may have been in the Utah Ions. DeLynn, his story is in many books. Dallin was born with cystic fibrosis, and he struggled for every breath that he took. And he had many surgeries, several near-death experiences, and in one near-death experience, he saw himself in a classroom in the premortal life. And the teacher said, "Do I have any volunteers for cystic fibrosis?" The teacher wrote it on the board, and he saw his hand go up, and he volunteered for that. And before he could come with that illness, the angels that were assigned to him, they had to discuss it and approve it, because it had to have various approvals. Dallin said, never did he ever consider himself a victim anymore. And he was such a noble man who has passed away, who taught that beautiful principle. And it's like the beautiful poem about the tapestry. We see the back of the rug and it's all zigzagged and crazy. But when you see the front of the rug and the beauty that that life has lived, even though it's been a hard life, the beautiful picture of that life that they take back to God, I think that is the true story of the nature of trials. That makes sense to me. Does that make sense to you?
I just had the feeling I should share something with you. I've had a near-death experience. And before I had this experience, I had a dream where I saw myself in this dream. I left my body and I went to heaven. And I had this experience with Heavenly Father. And he was telling me that I was going to have this special little boy. And he was going to be such a great leader. And this little boy was going to be so amazing. And the thing I needed to do was just love him. I woke up from the dream and I told my husband, "Oh, honey, wake up. You got to hear my dream." And he says, "Oh, honey, it's just a dream." He didn't believe in dreams. Well, I went to sleep. I had the dream again. I woke up my husband again, "Honey, go back to sleep." A third time I had the dream. And then when I woke up in the morning, it came. And I said to my husband, "Do you think I'm pregnant?" Because I had been nursing a baby for a year and never had a period. And I didn't know if I was pregnant or not. And he said, "Oh, honey, don't worry about it." That day I had a miscarriage. And I had it at home. And when the child came, I passed this baby and it broke in half at the waist. And I was just so beside myself. Well, then 1 month later, I had this same dream over again. All night long, three dreams. Only this time it was a little girl. And I thought, "I am confused. Heavenly Father, please help me. I'm confused." Well, then I got sick and I was sick for 3 months. And the doctor told me I had a good case of the flu. And I was so sick, I had two other little children, and I would lay on the floor and just go throw up in the toilet every time, you know, I was just really ill. Well, then they found out that I was pregnant, but none of the tests came positive. It was all these other things that came positive. Anyway, about 4.5 months, I was so huge that I looked like I was ready to deliver my last child. And the doctor couldn't understand. And so then I told the doctor, "Well, I had these two experiences, one night and next month, the next night." And he said, "Oh, no, I don't believe in dreams. I don't think that could be." Well, I ended up having a set of twins. But the interesting thing was that I died in between having the first baby and the second baby. And they were both born breech, and I was having them natural. And so what ended up happening was, when I was in heaven having this experience, I was eventually told I had to go back. And when I came back, I was on the ceiling and looking down, and I saw my body laying there, and I was so confused. I couldn't figure out why my body was there. And my spirit was up here, and I was looking down at my body, and I saw these two babies laying on me. And at the time, they did not know I was going to have twins. When I came into the delivery, they had no idea there was twins. But this nurse thought she could hear three heartbeats, so they prepared for triplets. So I had no idea what I was having, didn't know I was having twins. The interesting thing about this was my son, to answer some of these questions, my son, who I had this little boy that was broken half, my son, then I had twins, right? Well, I had a boy and a girl. My son, when he was 21, he had this experience where he was told that he had died. And when he was a baby, and he had to come back, and he had to plead with God to come back a second time. And that's when he came as twins. So I've had that experience. I have 11 children, but this was my third delivery when I delivered these twins and had this experience. I mean, I saw Christ and I saw many other people there. And so I understand the process, but I understand that it's real. It's just real. As much as you're sitting here, it's just as real over here when you're having this experience as when you're here in this room and I'm telling this experience. And I've had children come to me and tell me their names ahead of time in dreams and say, I have to be named this. This is my name. And they knew that name before they ever came.
That's right. That's amazing. You have a lot of wonderful things. I hope you've written those down.
I've been so busy with my 11 kids, I haven't written them all. I haven't written anything down.
That really needs to go in your journal.
Do you believe in karma or multiple mortal experiences?
Well, not generally. We hear about these stories of people coming back to gain a healthy body. I think of the story I heard years ago. It's a story of a woman who was sitting on an airplane with a gentleman by the name of David O. McKay. And she asked him, what do you believe in reincarnation? Do you believe in reincarnation? And he said, we call it pre-existence. Let me tell you about it. I do not believe in reincarnation because we don't see much evidence for it in the near-death studies. The last statistic I heard was 1% or less than 1%. One of the studies that Diane Corcoran had done, or one of them, that there was less than 1% evidence of any indication of reincarnation in a near-death experience.
There was a lady who passed away, and she was told, and this is Sarah Lynn Elmanay, I don't know if you've ever heard of her.
Sure.
Yeah, she said that people were allowed to see from the spirit world, they're allowed to view people that they loved or incidents that happened maybe in the 1800s. And then when they came to Earth, it was like she remembered seeing that.
And
when we have a deja vu, it's a little remembrance of what we were able to see.
I think that's a great explanation. Like George Patton remembered fighting in great battles, but perhaps he just witnessed those battles to train to be a great general. It makes a lot of sense.
We want to thank Sarah for coming, if you can join with me and giving her one last round of applause.